Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and we are here for our Insulin Resistance Solution Practitioner Training Q&A and coaching call. It's also a general INE coaching call, so anybody that's in various programs, but right now the only programs going on are NEPT and IRSPT, so that's what we'll focus on. Certainly, if you're in NEPT and you have another question that's not related to insulin resistance, we can take that. I prefer to do those more towards the end so we can handle all the blood sugars first. And I just want to give you a recap of where we're at in the program and what you should be focusing your attention on. So far, we've given you lots of great information to work with and tools to work with in the areas of assessment, which is your blood sugar measurement and lab testing. And we recommended as next steps for that module is that you just start testing your own blood sugar, testing your client's blood sugar, testing your family member's blood sugar, taking a look at some labs that maybe people already have, and just start getting familiar with the process of evaluating people for blood sugar imbalance. And, of course, there's the assessments like questionnaires and the insulin resistance questionnaire. And you're going to get to the point where you're going to look at somebody and go, ooh, this person needs to be evaluated for insulin resistance. And that typical look is the weight that accumulates around the middle. Even if they're not overweight in other places, but they have that weight that accumulates around the middle, and they look kind of, you know, tired, the dark circles under their eyes, a lot of that, you're going to just start to pick them out. So the way that we're going to structure, okay, so that was that. Let me just go back one more. And then we have the nutrition module open. And there's a lot of great resources for you on the nutrition module. Let's see. I'm going to go to core content. We also have done-for-you stuff in every one of these. So we're going to go through core content. What is this? Is it not up yet? Oh, there it is. Why is it in two levels? Oh, core content. There we go. Okay, nutrition. So there's a video, and it's a fairly long video. I couldn't figure out how to shorten it. Let me see. I think it's like an hour. Yeah, it's an hour and 12 minutes. I like to keep these videos short if possible, but a lot of them get to be, it's just hard to find the right spot to split them. So you're welcome to start listening and then come back and do 20 minutes here and there. You're also welcome to download them to your own devices and watch them at your leisure. And also in this nutrition module, we've given you a whole bunch of additional materials. Some materials that we've taken from our Before Be Gone program, like things that you can work with your clients with, how the glycemic index of foods is measured, herbs you can help them get started on. And it's up to you to go through and work with them and say, you know, here's two or three herbs that we can help you to take. These seem like they're good for your constitution. So I give you little descriptions. And then you can always look the herbs up on the web or in a good herbal book. I highly recommend books by, like, people like David Winston, and there's a couple of others that I have that I like a lot. But they're really just ways to go and learn more. And then we've given you your recipe guide, your menu planner. Those are not books you can actually give to your clients. You can certainly recommend that they purchase those, and then you can work with them on them. But you are welcome to model their program after those books. We will eventually get to the point where we have a licensing agreement with those books, but those are books that have taken, you know, they've cost me thousands of dollars and hundreds of hours to compile. So those are things that we can't just have you be able to give away. And there's just a whole lot of stuff related to nutrition. I highly recommend that you just go through and take it at your own leisure. Watch the video, go through the various books, and then also go to, and all of your modules, go to progress checklist, print it out for that particular module, and it takes you through step-by-step what you should do. Review the advanced topics. I gave you some advanced topics and articles and things like that. So you've got your work cut out for you to learn this stuff and help your clients to be able to put together a diet that's going to do 30-day metabolic reset. And we've given you all that you need to do that. So, and actually we'll have a whole module on the 30-day metabolic reset where we're going to teach you how to actually put it into place once we've presented all the core content. So next piece up is going to be the stress module, and I know that behind the scenes we're busy getting some videos edited and things are a little bit behind because of the holidays and we had so much all of it all at the same time, but they should be up fairly soon. Okay, so the way this works is anybody that has questions, comments, raise your hand and we'll just go at it. And I'd love to hear how you're doing so far. So in addition to your questions and your comments and any coaching that I could give you, I'd love for you to just, like one or two people, just share what you've been doing so far. Have you been testing blood sugar on yourself? Have you been testing blood sugar on other folks? And just share with me what you've been doing so far with the materials we've presented. So I'm not sure if those were up before. I'm putting down all the lines, hands, so if you put your hand up before, put it back up again because I can't tell whether you were telling me that you could hear me or not, because I don't remember if I put those down. So raise your hand if you'd like to share some of the things you've been doing with working with people with the insulin resistance protocol so far, if you have any clients lined up, if you have family members that you're working with. Go ahead and raise your hand with a star 2. And then if you're on the web, go ahead and refresh. I have to refresh. Go ahead and type in questions. And there's nothing so far. Hey, guys, you're awfully quiet out there. You mean you've got this nailed, right? Okay, I'm going to open up Tony's. I'm going to open up Tony's line. Hi, Tony.
Hello, Dr. Rita Marie. How are you today?
I am wonderful, thank you. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm actually using blood glucose meter with my husband. You may recall that was eating pie and ice cream for dinner. And, So anyway, as it turns out, once we got him off of that for about a week, things went down to normal for him. The first day that we did the testing was December 1st, and his fasting glucose was 88.
Nice.
Overnight, which is great. The problem with him is he's in and out of the house quite a bit, and so it's hard to get tracking during the day. But he's never risen more than 25 points. And usually, you know, if I catch him during the day, because he doesn't eat any sugar during the day, it stays between 70, 75, maybe as high as 78. The issue for me is the early morning blood glucose is never below 88. And today it was 93. So I'm just trying to figure out why he's normal during the day, but at night, I know he doesn't sleep at night.
There's your answer.
He's got PTSD issues, so that's the answer, yeah. Cortisol.
There's your answer, yeah. And he may have some nights that are more stressful than others, some nights where maybe he's having memories or dreams, and that's causing him to wake up in a stress response, and cortisol will rise the blood sugar. Depending on how close to morning that is, it's going to be variable. But you're on the right track. And anyway, if he's been out of whack and you're just starting to get him back in, it's only been a few days. So you're going to see those numbers in 80s, 90s, 80s, 90s. That's okay. Occasionally it might go in up even higher. And you might ask him, did you have some dreams last night? Did you have any, you know, bad memories? How was your sleep last night? And you might even keep track of that. Right, just write it down in a tracking chart because that's going to give you clues. Like a month from now, you're not going to remember that on December 2nd he said he had a bad dream unless you write it down. So just keep track of it on the chart so that if you're going through, you can start to analyze that.
Okay, I will do that. And one other thing, we're also monitoring his high blood pressure, because prior to him going off the ranch and eating all this pie and ice cream like crazy, we had his blood pressure down to the point where he didn't have to take medication for almost a whole year.
Ooh, good.
I know. I was so proud and so proud of him. But now his blood pressure goes up and down and up and down. It goes from normal to the mid-level of high, back down to normal. So every day and even two or three times a day, it's like it reads crazy.
So it's up and down throughout the day then, not from day to day, but throughout the day.
throughout the day, and yeah, and from day to day, we don't really, like before, he always stayed in the 125 range, 126 range, and now, 126 over like 80 or something, now it goes anywhere from, I'm trying to look at his readings here, it's very difficult to nail him down and write things down. 150 over 100. This morning it was as high as 180, and it's been as low as 140 over 90, and then one day it was 128. It just doesn't seem, I'm concerned because I can't seem to find what the triggers are and why it's up and down and up and down like that.
And you've looked at it to see how it compares to his sleep?
Now that I will have to do. Yeah. I will do that. Yeah, I think, you're right. If I get a handle on that and monitor that and track it, that might give any clue to how to get his blood pressure back down.
Yeah, find triggers. And you may not notice it, the first few days or week, but you track it for a couple of weeks, and then you start to go back like a detective. And that's what a lot of what we do is like detective work. We're just trying to see what are all the clues. We are this amazingly complex body. It's not like you're working with, a piece of mechanics that has a limited number of working parts that could go wrong. We're really complex. And so we understand a lot about how it works, but there's also a lot of other things that factor in. Do you have them doing any heart math?
I'm trying to get him to do that. I had him also do yoga nidra because I do yoga nidra, teach him, and I do yoga nidra for him. And he's okay if I do it, but for him to actually sit and try to do heart math, it's just very difficult for him to get into it. So I'm looking for ways to try to help him. And it's only a few minutes. But
you know,
I can
what
see
might
him
help
like
him?
A pokey.
Is they have a computer version of it, like a little device, right? They have the M-Wave, and they have a little electrode that you can just put in directly in the computer, and they have games. Mm. And the way that you, people do the shoot-up, bang-up video games, and you see all this stuff. Well, it's not like that. It's more you control the characters and the coloring and all the stuff on the screen by your coherence score. So the more coherent you are, the more progress you make in the game. And a lot of people who have a hard time just doing the technique, they have fun when they can do it with a game.
Okay, that makes sense. Because he, sitting still is an issue for him. He likes to be overstimulated. I have to sleep at night with a mask over my eyes, earphones, brainwave music, just so I can sleep at night. Because he likes, he's overstimulated. So that would be very helpful for me. So thank you.
Yeah, the more you can get him doing that, he may find it fun to do a game.
Okay. And then I have one other issue to add on top of that that I'm starting to realize as we're chatting here is that he's been putting off surgery, and we finally have to have it done to the knee. And it's going to be December 16th, and I'm sure he's thinking about that a lot too.
Oh, yeah, so he's got a lot on his mind. And know that his blood sugar is going to be erratic before, during, and after.
All right.
And his blood pressure.
As far as the food is concerned, I mean, I know he's, he's that's not even on my radar, the Thai and ice cream. And I've seen him make a smoothie. He's not doing a whole lot of, he's not doing three jars of the bottled juices and throwing that on top of the fruit and everything else he's adding there, so he doesn't do that anymore. But, this is going to help me help him. I really appreciate that. Yeah,
no problem. It's great. And you're asking these questions is going to help other people, because this is the thing we have to realize, that this isn't, it's not rocket science, but it's darn close. And it's really, it's complex to understand, the physiological and biochemical mechanisms. And the more you dig in and you look for patterns, the more you learn. And it just is phenomenal, and it's a detective work. I can tell you these are the things that should happen, but then all of a sudden something screwy happens, and you go, huh? I just had somebody get back to me today on the call I had right before this, and she had gotten, her blood sugars were really good. She did a green cleanse, they stayed good, and then she did a 4-day water fast, and after her 4-day water fast, her sugars were all over the map. We're going, So we got it, worked on some of that stuff, and I got her on some berberine and up to chromium, and she just got on today to say, yep, since she started that, everything's steady again. So, we don't always have a complete explanation, but we think about, okay, what's the pathway for that? How does that work? What could it be? And it sounds like for him, the sleep and the stress are the biggies, right?
Yeah.
Does he move?
I agree.
Does he exercise?
Because of the knee, he was doing that before, and that's how we were able to control the blood pressure a little bit, too, and his stress. But because of the knee, I mean, it's basically he's on borrowed time. He can't even support his own weight. I'm trying to get him to do things just with the arms, moving up and down. And
yeah, can you get him one of those the stairs thing that you can put on the desktop and he can do them with his arms? Do you know what I mean? He can do bursts with that.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, Amazon has them. They're like $35. They're like pedals, but you sit them on the desktop and you use your arms. And everybody should have that anyway, just because we tend to do a lot of our aerobics with our legs, and it's nice to have that extra.
And what's it called again, Dr. Rita Marie?
Ooh, let's see. Something like, if I go to desk.
I can probably Google it and find it, I'm sure.
I don't even know how I found it, but arm exerciser.
All right, or something. Yeah, I'm sure I'll be able to find it. That won't be difficult.
Yeah, I just typed in desktop arm exerciser. You know, Google is so smart that you can have really lame stuff, and a whole bunch of them came up. So that's what I typed.
Okay. Well, that's perfect. Thank you again.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, you're welcome. There's a lot of different ones, and they look cool.
Yeah. And I know I said thank you, and I thought I was done, but I do want to tell you that I'm gaining so much confidence on all these calls that I'm on with you and getting this information and then, you know, playing around with it, not just theoretically but practically. So it's given me a lot of confidence and a lot of practical experience. So and then to have you as support, like, okay, if I go off on the ledge and say I don't know what this looks like or if I'm doing the right thing, I'm so grateful to be able to speak with you and also the other members of our group so that I can continue to help people and not be afraid.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the feedback. And we do have an awesome group, don't we? I mean, every time you type anything in on the website, it's like, oh, you get, 35 responses. It's so cool.
I love it.
Yeah, me too. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, so who's next? Hang on 1 second. All right, good. Next, we had Maria. You live in the same area of Georgia as Tracy. So, Maria, I don't know you.
Hi.
Maria. Hi.
We spoke last time. How are you doing?
We did speak last time. Okay, yeah, now I recognize your voice. Hi.
There's a little bit of an accent. I'm originally from Brazil.
You're originally from Brazil?
Yeah.
Cool.
I've been here. I've been here for 18 years now. But, yeah, Tracy and I haven't met, but she mentioned she lives around the corner, not too far.
Not too far. Good. You guys have to have, like, a study group or something.
Yeah. I think we should coordinate that. But before I give you an update, I never got the email for today, and I'm kind of going through over here, so I have the number saved. Is there important for me to log in, I guess, because I don't have the link, or is that something that I can get this link someplace else?
Wow, you should have gotten that email. I'm so sorry. We're having some really bad back-end problems. I have to get resolved really quickly because that's not good. That's not good. That was supposed to have gone out. Okay, let me look.
Maybe I'm the only one, but if other
people
are...
Yeah, I'm going to look in your record, because I can look you up to see if there's, like, maybe there's an issue with a tag being set wrong or something. I'm glad that you had it. How did you know that we were having the call? You got a message?
Oh, I knew because I made a note. I mean, in the site has all
the
calendar.
Yeah.
All the day. Yeah, the calendar. So I put that on the calendar, on my calendar, day one, so I wouldn't
all
forget.
All right, I'm going to go in and look you up. And I'm going to find out why you didn't get it. And if it's not, and if anybody else didn't get the email today, reminder, raise your hand. But it looked like they probably did because there were like 12 people on the website.
Yeah.
So
that's what I figured. And I'm like, okay, well, I look into all the little folders over here and I don't see any. But anyway, I think that on the call is just fine. I mean, we're not following any PowerPoint or anything today, right?
No, there's no PowerPoint.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, anyway,
I'm going to say, spell your last name because I'm on a different screen. It's
H-O-R-S?
Yep.
T-M-A-N-N. Horstmann.
Horstmann. Okay. I am putting that in right now. I'll look you up to see if maybe it's... Okay, there you are. You have two emails. I wonder if that's the problem.
I look in the other one, too, and I want to talk to Scott and just put under one.
Put them together. Yeah, he can merge them.
Yeah.
Which one do you get most of your stuff related to the program?
It's the BFABU.
Which one?
M. Horstmann.
Oh, BFABU. Okay, got it. I'm opening you up right now.
Okay.
And I'm going to look to see if you've got the IRSPT tags. You do. You have all the tags. And if I look at Payne's, let's see.
But that's okay. I mean, we don't have to take time with this call. I mean, I can handle it. I can talk to Scott.
Yeah, Scott. I don't know if everybody else didn't get the call too. So let me just see if anybody else. I'll talk to see if anybody else didn't get the call, and we'll check into it.
We don't have to take time with this call.
That's
okay. The way that I'm doing this. So this week has been quite hectic for me. I'm kind of getting a new website and all that, and I kind of quit my job. It was going south over there, and I said I'm going to focus 100% on this and see what will happen. I'm doing a few other things. You know, this program fits to what I want to do and offer quite well. And I used to be a sugar addict myself. And I handled that, you know, through my own studies, but having the science and having more of the information and details that you're providing really is making me feel more comfortable when I talk to certain clients.
Good.
And I've been, so a couple of them are going to join, and I actually want to know if you know a company called Standard Process for supplements.
Yeah.
You know them?
Yep.
What do you think about them?
You know, they have some good formulas. The thing I don't like about them is they have a lot of things are tablets, and they use a lot of excipients, magnesium stearate and other things that I don't like. So I don't use them very much.
You don't use them?
No.
Okay.
And they have good products and formulations, but I don't like additives and preservatives and, you know, things like that in my supplements. So I tend to use the formula, the companies that don't add those things.
Which are?
Thorne, Premier Research, Pure Encapsulations. Those are my favorite.
Okay. All right, great. Because I'm working with them. You know, I've learned how to do, you probably heard about the nutritional muscle testing. And I'm starting to become more active with that, and I work with the company. Well, obviously, I don't have the credential as a doctor, but I work with a doctor, so I can get the supplements through them. But so on the, you know, I have a couple clients, they have done the test, the insulin resistance, and they got pretty high numbers, and that was not surprising to me. Because, you know, because I monitor, you know, I get their food diary before they started the program and start changing that slowly, I adapt them. So I got their kind of products on the magnesium and chromium, you know, to put them to regulate. But the diet actually that I normally try to, recommend is it's very, you know, sugar-free.
Mm-hmm.
But very rich in vegetables and protein. It's kind of balanced.
Great.
But I'm kind of adding, you know, or putting more, I guess, emphasis on some of these foods that you recommend in case it's not in my recommendation. But for me, what I'm actually testing right now, I've tested myself, quite interesting, is, you know, I went back to eat sugar. I just put a little bit compared to what I used to eat, and it blew out of mind. I mean, it's just an amazing thing. And I said, oh, my God, I used to be on this all day long. and you know, how I didn't become a diabetic, I don't know, but I had an A1C of 5.7 at some point. And then it's all regulated, it's all fine now, but so now I'm kind of testing with sleep, you know, and exercise.
Great.
And see how my body does. So I got some interesting results. I didn't sleep last night. Not at all. I went all over all night long, and I've done that multiple times, you know, being a workaholic. And this year has been really good on my sleep. I focused that sleep is going to be a priority. So my body has been, yeah, you have to sleep. So to stay awake, I'm much more tired, you know. the body responds pretty quickly. But then I not only I didn't sleep, I went to the gym and I rode for 5K. And it's interesting to see your body. You know, that's about 23 minutes for me.
Mm-hmm.
And to see your body that was kind of weak, but it really, the energy picks up, and all of a sudden I'm awake. I was exhausted. I you know, I could barely open my eyes from here to the gym, and I came back all alive, and I'm fine, you know. It's all interesting, and I'm measuring the insulin as it goes. But I do have a question for you. And this is, I kind of touched that a couple of times last time on the exercise. So I do CrossFit, and, you know, there is all that science behind, you know, after you eat, after you exercise, that you should consume carbohydrates, you know, to replenish, and some protein and fat. Well, I always have carbs, fat, and protein. I follow more like a zone diet, although it's more fat-oriented for me. That's what works. I have tried a few times not to eat afterwards, but what is your experience about when does the science kind of potentially collide on this, you know, about the muscle replenishment and waiting for the insulin, the hormone growth to kind of, you know, we benefit the most if we exercise but don't eat for an hour or so. Do you follow my question?
Yeah, I follow your question. And like everything else, there are conflicting studies. The ones that were most convincing to me, because I used to think that same thing, we need to eat within an hour of exercising. I used to think the same thing until I looked at the science. And it was very convincing to me, especially when we're talking about insulin and growth hormone.
Yeah.
You don't want to have a surge of insulin right after you've done this beautiful exercise. You want to get the benefit of having growth hormone elevated for at least an hour, so that you can get all that great muscle work that you did to replenish your muscle. You'll replenish it from fat. You don't need to eat it. That's my opinion.
Okay.
You don't need to get it from outside, because when you have a growth hormone surge, it pumps up fat burning. So, you know, we don't need to add more calories. And now the difference might be someone who is underweight and, you know, training for a marathon. They're going to need to just keep eating. But for the average person who's trying desperately to build muscle, I think that's a lot of the reason why a lot of folks we talk to say, you know, I go to the gym, I do all this workout, and nothing, it doesn't show. Nothing shows. Well, they're drinking Gatorade right after they go to the gym.
Oh, that's a different story, yes.
Or anything carbohydrate, though. You know, it doesn't matter whether you drink apple juice or Gatorade, or whether you eat, you know, dates or something else for carbohydrate.
Uh-huh.
Or not, it's still going to trigger insulin, and protein's going to trigger insulin. So, you know, there's mixed feelings about that. Do it within an hour. Just give the growth hormone a chance to actually replenish the muscles and burn some fat at the same time. That's where I'm lying. Now, there may be some new research that comes out as time goes on where I may change my tune, but where I'm at right now and what I've looked at, I feel really strongly that when we have a surge of growth hormone, we want to maintain it.
Yeah,
let it go. So within an hour, about an hour later, right?
Yeah.
90 minutes is about as all the growth hormone surge lasts. So, you know, if you go 90 minutes, great. And if you don't, I usually, for me, when I get back from a run, I'll usually just make myself wait an hour.
Yeah. Okay, well, it kind of makes sense, though. I actually didn't follow that thought process entirely. Of the benefits of the growth hormone and the fat burning, you know. And, yes, it's going to utilize just like the same thing they say. I mean, a lot of it, we don't have to eat a lot of carbs, you know, because we can, we create, our body creates their own carbs, carbohydrates. So, but I eat, you know, my carbs are, you know, if we really think about carbs, you know, I have, it's mostly vegetables. I do some starch, like sweet potato, but it's, my diet is so little, you know, on that. And it's mostly coming from calorie intake. It's mostly coming from fat. Okay. No, this is great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. And you know what you're going to find? The more you learn, the more you understand the mechanism, the more that you'll be able to just make sense of studies. And you and I could read the same study, and we may have different opinions about it. It happens all the time, and that's why there's so many, there's good intellectual debates about it. And I think what the bottom line is to come down to is understand that there are controversies and then just play with it with people and see what works best.
Actually, I did work out with a client. She's doing superb in the program that I put her on. And I said, are you willing to be a guinea pig here, you know, on the insulin? And do not eat. She worked out with me in the morning. At 7:30, I'm a trainer as well. So she wakes up, and within an hour, she's at my place, and then I'm saying, wait an hour from this point on to eat. And we adjusted her foods. You know, when she eats a little bit more because before she was eating some, you know, just to give her some kick and energy, and then after when she would get home after exercising. And she started collapsing. She's like, this is not working for me. I mean, like, you know, and I'm like, well, you know what? That doesn't work for you, and that's it. So we tried different times, you know, amounts. And I said, what works for you is what was working before. You come over here, you have energy. You have the energy left for the whole day. You don't have, and she's breastfeeding too. So until then, nothing has been crashed.
That's a whole different story. You can't make a breastfeeding woman go too long without eating.
Yeah, so I'm like, yep. So it only lasted a few days, and I said, no, we're stopping immediately. Go back to normal. Anyway.
We're human guinea pigs. We test the theories out. We see how they work. And, you know, for me, it works best not to wake up and have a big meal with protein in it. It works best to wait a few hours before I eat.
Right.
In the morning. Now, if I wait too long, then I'm famished at 4 in the afternoon, and I'm eating everything in sight.
Right.
You have to find what works for you and for your clients, but know it come from an intellectual place, not a place of dogma.
That's right. Yep. Okay, thank you.
You're so welcome. Great question. And now we have Eleanor.
Hello.
Hello. Did you get an email reminder for this today, by the way?
I did.
You did. So maybe there's something wrong with Maria's account. We'll have Scott fix it.
Okay. You just actually, I had a question, but you just made me have another question. So I thought that when you wanted to get some protein, not, I know the exercise thing, but if you wanted to get some protein within an hour of waking, it's cortisol. Okay, because cortisol.
Oh, absolutely, you should. And in different people work better, but I find that some people don't, and there's a lot of research now that's saying that it's best to exercise on an empty stomach without food in. But, again, it's very different from person to person. It depends on where they're at, what kind of reserves they have, et cetera. I just said for me, I find that it's easier because I tend to, once I eat, it's like all I can be, let me have something more, as opposed to, just skip it. Or I have a green smoothie. That's what I do best on. All I've had today has been a quart of green smoothie and a little bowl of cashew yogurt, and I'm good. It's 2:30 in the afternoon, and I'm fine.
Yeah. Okay. So the I had just read recently that, and I understand half of this but not the other half, that it's been shown that lowering cortisol and elevating DHEA leads to better glycemic control in patients with type 2 diabetes.
Absolutely.
Now, I understand the cortisol, that's definitely the stress thing, and I know that DHEA is tied to controlling your cortisol, right? So I guess the DHEA piece is the piece I'm not 100%.
Okay, yeah, I can clear that up. And in fact, in the somewhere in the nutrition part of the module, there's a couple of slides where I showed some studies that showed how DHEA helps with glycemic control. But you've got your adrenals, and pretty much when the cortisol is high, the DHEA is low. When the DHEA is high, the cortisol goes low. Then the they're of course, because you know the substrates, right? They're made from the same pregnenolone and as a precursor.
Right. Okay.
So when you give somebody, so say you give somebody DHEA, that can actually inhibit the cortisol, which is good if the person's in a stage 1 adrenal fatigue.
Okay.
It may not be so good if they're in stage 3 adrenal fatigue.
Right. Okay. I remember that now, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a balance. Usually when they're in a stage 3 adrenal fatigue, though, their DHEA is in the toilet as well. But if you notice in my adrenal fatigue protocols, usually I have people do about like 2 drops 3 times a day of DHEA, whereas when they're in stage 1, I have them do 4.
And how long do you do that before you retest them?
I usually like to test in 3 months.
3 months.
Yep.
And is there some danger if you're having trouble getting the person? Is there a test that just is it possible to just test DHEA besides going to a doctor? And they can, of course.
You can do it through direct labs. You can do DHEA sulfate in the blood, sure.
So there is a direct lab just for DHEA?
Yep. Absolutely. You can do it that way. But make sure if you're going to do it if you're going to do the adrenal stress test and then you're going to follow up with just the DHEA, make sure you've also done the blood DHEA at the time of the adrenal stress test, because otherwise you're comparing apples and oranges, because you don't know what the blood level was at the time of the stress test, right?
Because one is the blood and one is the saliva?
Yeah, they're very different.
Okay. I do have a blood reading of DHEA on this person.
Okay, good. Then you can do another one and check it and see. Is he on the DHEA?
Yes.
How much?
Two in the morning and 2 in the evening, because he can't do it at work. So that's what I'm better than nothing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking that he needs to be retested soon, because it's been 3 months, and he also has the blood sugar. So I'm just curious why it's not helping with that. So that's kind of why I asked the question.
And he may need more. He may need that third dose.
Yeah. Yes.
Is it that he can't do it at work, or he won't do it at work?
He won't have a little bottle at work and take it out. Yeah. The other thing I'm really trying to understand triglycerides, because I have two big sources of triglycerides in my head. One is fructose, and one is excess carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
But are triglycerides something that just float around in your blood? They don't really get stored anywhere?
They do. Actually, the storage form of fat is triglycerides. So if you've got, visceral fat or whatever, it's going to be in the form of triglycerides. It's a storage form. So you basically, when it's floating around in the blood, it means that there's excessive, there may be too many carbohydrates that are getting converted. There's a number of mechanisms that could be at play. So while it's a lipid, it's a kind of a lipid that gets formed from carbohydrates, the excess carbohydrates that don't get utilized for fuel. So when we say, hey, insulin comes along and says, can't get this blood this sugar into the cells, we're going to store it, it stores it. It converts it to triglycerides, which is why triglycerides in the bloodstream is a good marker. So it may store it, and there's more floating around in the bloodstream before it actually gets put, in the belly and the subcutaneous fat and all areas.
Okay, so, this may sound like a very silly question, but is that the only way it gets stored? Because we have fat throughout our body, and I guess I thought that at the end, when we don't need the glucose for energy, it is also a normal thing to store it in the rest of the fat in our body.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is that triglycerides too?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Okay, that's maybe where I'm thinking it's a special type of fat. It's not the fat that subcutaneous, the fat, I know there's this visceral fat, subcutaneous fat, but it all can be triglycerides, right? It's not necessarily a different type of fat.
Right.
Okay.
Right. I'm just going to look up and verify that I'm not giving you misinformation here. That's my understanding.
Okay. Because if we eat fats, it can be stored as fat, If we eat excess carbohydrates, it could be stored as fat. If we have excess, okay.
Okay, let's see. Okay. La, la, la. Storage form. Triglycerides are basically the fatty acids formed together with glycerol to hold it together.
Okay.
So the fat enters and exits fat cells as fatty acids. Triglycerides are too big to move across the wall. And then inside they cycle in and out. And they have to be broken down. What I'm mucky on right now is my understanding of the mechanism by which the triglycerides get elevated in the bloodstream.
Yeah.
So the fatty acids pass into the. Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
I mean, I know I've read that fructose stimulates excess triglycerides. So I'm assuming that it's getting changed into triglycerides.
Let me get back to you on that. I want to give you a really clear explanation.
Okay.
And right now my brain has been, you know, focused on insulin and I'm not able to access that part of my data bank.
Okay.
And I'm finding myself a little mucky about where the conversions happen.
I said exactly what you mean. I understand totally. I just have one simple question, simple question. And this is a doctor said to me, and I haven't read this anywhere, so I just wanted to bounce it off you, that losing weight can help bring your uric acid down.
To help bring it down?
Yeah, that's what he, when he said that to me, I said, what? I haven't heard that's a new one, but.
Well, you know, we do see that people get elevated uric acid as a result of excess, right? That's the binge. They go out, the red wine, red meat, and that kind of stuff. They're the feasting, you know, it happens to be it's not a poor man's disease, it's a rich man's disease is what they say about gout, right? So that would make sense that as you lose weight, but I'm just drawing a blank again on the mechanism by that which that would happen.
Yeah, because, you know, losing weight helps with a lot of things.
It does. Well, it just helps in general. But it might be not the losing weight itself, but the fact that you go on a better diet to do that.
Right.
I don't know.
It's a consequence. Okay.
Right. It's, I mean, causation versus correlation.
Right.
I just pulled up a Medline article. This is... hate it when you do a search on something and then it has this really cool comment. And you go, oh, I want to know more, and you go in the article and it doesn't say that at all.
And you can't find it anywhere.
You can't find it.
Like,
what?
I don't know what search mechanism does that, but it's very rude because you can't.
I know.
Like,
here's another British Medical Journal. They did a study that implicated insulin resistance in the pathogenesis of gout. Insulin resistance causes everything. That's all I can say. The more I learn about insulin resistance, the more I think it's the bane of our existence.
Mm-hmm.
Beneficial effects of weight loss associated with moderate calorie restriction, increased portion of protein, I'll have to read this article. This one looks good. Yeah, I'll get back to you on that one.
Okay.
Because it's got me thinking about, you know, I'm trying to think the mechanism and how it would be, and this looks like an interesting article.
Okay. Yeah, that's the thing with me. If I can get like a mechanism in my head, then I can remember and it makes sense.
Exactly.
Facts, I just can't, you know, somehow I just can't retain it that well.
That's the way I've always been, and that's why when I was in college I studied math and computer science, because I didn't have to memorize anything. I just had to figure it out. And that's why I love physiology and biochemistry, because, yeah, there's some basic things you have to know, the names of things, but it's when you understand how it's working that you remember. And I remember this, you know, I had patients say that to me, where they'd been told rules about eating. Like, oh, don't eat this, this is good for you, this is bad for you, and they'd go, and then they'd eat the stuff and feel guilty. So that was as far as it got. But then when I explained to them the mechanism, you know, like hydrogenated fats, and this is what it does to your cell membranes, and this is what, you know, the sugar-coated blood cells do, and you explain the mechanism for them, they would say to me, oh, now I can do it, because I understand. And every time I think about eating that particular, you know, Cheeto or whatever, all I'm thinking about is stiffened blood vessels and oxidative stress, and you go, nah, I don't want it.
Yeah.
So memorizing a rule about what to eat and not to eat doesn't work as well as understanding a reason. And that's why I go into so much detail about this, so that you can learn as much as you can and then simplify it down to explain it to people in ways that they get. And they can say, oh, yeah, I don't want to do that. Oh, no, I'm not going to get stressed out, because that's just like eating a candy bar and my blood sugar is going to go up.
Yeah.
If I want my blood sugars up, I'm going to go eat the candy bar instead.
Instead, right.
Have more fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and the secret is simplifying it. That's really...
Yeah.
You explain the mechanism, and they're, like, rolling their eyes. They really don't want to hear it, because I don't...
Well, that's why I try to make it funny. You know, that's why I personify body parts and hormones, and people look at me like, you know, if I start to talk to some of my colleagues, they're looking at me like, wow, I never heard of it explained that way. I didn't know insulin had a gender, and I didn't know it could speak. I didn't know it could knock on the door. But, you know, you think about it. I like to talk about insulin knocking on the door of the cell and saying, hey, cells, here's some sugar I have for you. Bye, have fun. And then it goes, does it again.
Yeah.
And when the door's locked, it can't get in. And people get that. Like, oh, now I get it.
Yes. Okay, that was all I had. Those were my questions.
Oh, man, you stumped me twice. I got to go look two things up now. Okay. Oh, good. It's funny. I was on a call the other day, and somebody said, I don't know how you keep going. It's been 3 hours, and you're just still right on, and you're answering questions, and nobody stumps you. I said, nah, it occasionally happens. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eleanor. All right, so... M. Bailey in Bainbridge. Who's that? Hello? Bracebridge, Ontario. Oh, wait, I just shut your thing. So sorry. I thought I opened it. Hello, M. Bailey. Oh, we are. There you are. Hi.
That's me. Hi, I'm Bracebridge, Ontario.
Bracebridge, Ontario. And who is this?
Yep, Lori.
Oh, Lori. Okay. Hi, Lori.
Hi. Okay, so I found an old blood test.
Yes.
And so now I'm more than confused. So I have some questions.
Okay, good.
So I'm looking at the triglycerides HDL cholesterol for that ratio. Is that
okay.
correct?
You actually have to calculate the triglyceride HDL ratio, because they usually don't give it to you.
No, I get that. That's okay. But, okay, so for instance, first of all, I'm from Canada. And so the triglycerides I have, they're in mmol/L.
Okay.
So can I use the same conversion as I use for the blood?
What? Give me some numbers. Like, what's your triglyceride and what's your HDL?
Okay, so the triglycerides were 0.73.
Okay.
And the HDL was 1.88. So when I convert them, they looked really weird.
Okay. When you converted it to U.S.
the
numbers,
same way
mean?
I converted the blood.
Okay. Let me just, you know what I'm going to do? I'm pulling up my spreadsheet, and I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to plug those numbers in the spreadsheet, and I'll give
good.
You an answer. How's that?
That's good.
All right. So if we have triglycerides. Let me go into my, oh, I have to open up a different spreadsheet. Let me just get that out. And it's called, oh, man, I have too many windows open and they keep trying to pop up. Okay, assessments, there we go. Spreadsheets, lab tracking, international, here we go. All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to pop in those numbers. One of these days I'll have some semblance. I've got the insulin one, the glucose one's down, so I know what those are. Okay, so if I put in, says on here that the ideal range is 0.1 to 3 on triglycerides, and this is 0.73, so it looks like it's on the low end. Oh, it's actually the same. It comes out to be... Why is it not? Why is it not working? Let me see. It's not doing my conversion. This one's not working. Let me find an old version of the spreadsheet. Give me a second. My computer is sluggish today. Very sluggish. Why is this happening? Excel is not responding. Restart the program. Okay. What numbers did you get when you converted them? And did you use, like, one of the tables in a book?
I just used this diabetes.co.uk from the link. The same one I convert my blood with. So
okay.
Then I got 13.1 for the triglycerides, and HDL was 33.8. And that's why, and I thought from the notes it said 50 for triglycerides, and HDL was at 100, or do I might have that backwards?
HDL, you know, like I think about it like 75 each would be really nice numbers.
Oh, okay.
Okay, give me a second again. I had to restart Excel. It helps for me to see it in the spreadsheet, too. So if I go... All right. So if I find... Lab results international. Okay. Not responding again. There must be something wrong with that file. I'm trying an older version still. Okay, that one opened. All right, so okay, so if I put in 0.73 in triglycerides, that should give me 64.66, an HDL of 1.88 comes out to be 72.6. So if I calculate the ratio, this is what I want to do. So I calculate the triglyceride HDL ratio, it's less than 1, which is in a favorable position. So it's 64 over 72. And if I do, I get, it's close to about 90%. If I do 0.7 to 1.9, it's a much different ratio. So I think you're really, I don't know that ratio really holds up.
So what is the conversion rate? Like how could I, like, for, you know, the numbers that you're quoting,
Yeah.
How do I convert my Canadian numbers to yours?
Yeah.
Because I thought it was the same as the blood.
No, you can't use that same thing. So here's what you have to do. You can't use the same as the year. So I'm going to give you a link.
Okay.
There's an international conversion, and it's different for each one. That's the hard part about it. That's why I did it in a spreadsheet, just because it's all coded in there. So if I go and do, I think it's called SI to U.S. conversion. Usually. Yeah, so I typed in, and there's this thing on the AMA Manual of Style or something. Let me find it. Oh, converting, here's one. Do a Google search, SI, for Standard International, to U.S. conversion, and a number of different calculators will come up, and you can use whichever one works best for you.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Yep. And you have to make sure that you do it properly, you know, going in one direction it's multiplying, and in the other direction it's dividing.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay?
Yes, thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay, let me go back. Lori's, and then let me see if there's any questions typed in. Yeah, we do have some questions typed in, so let me do these. Okay, Cage in New York, hi. I've been testing my blood sugar, ran out of the test strips very quickly, sometimes 5-minute test, I get error signals. I reused the needle for up to 5 times, so I used the needle only once. You can use the needle up to 5 times, that's no problem. I just use mine until it's dull. But don't tell anybody that. You get error signals. It could be a problem with the strips. It could be a problem with your meter. So you might want to contact the company about that. Yep. Yeah, because it had nothing to do with the needle. It would either be the strips or this. Sometimes if the strips have been in too cold an environment, too warm an environment, or if you've opened up the container and not closed it right away, they build up moisture and then they don't work well. The other thing is if you put it in and you put the blood on it too soon or you wait too long. So when you're first learning, I remember I wasted a bunch because I wasn't paying attention. You stick the strip in, and then if you're fiddling around with the unit to pull your blood and it takes too long, I just did it. You wait for the little beep, 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 and then you click, and you make sure that it's still flashing, then you do it, and you make sure the blood goes all the way up to the top. So it's either operator error or problem with either the meter or the strips, and you might want to get another box, a bottle of them. And Jean said she didn't get that either. Okay, we're going to look into why those aren't coming. Phyllis. Oh, my husband has agreed to go through the IRSPT program with me and is starting the blood sugar monitoring assessment. Of course, he wants to go right into the intervention phase before starting to finish. When he eats a low glycemic diet, his blood sugars don't go above 100. However, when he has a higher glycemic meal with noodles or a large panini, his blood sugars rose above 112 to 122 from a baseline high 70s to low 80s. And at least one incident, within 15 minutes, it went from 112 to 64 without any symptoms. So it sounds like he might be in early stages where he's having some reactive hypoglycemia. He might be in hyperinsulinemia stage. Could this possibly be reactive hypoglycemia? Yes. Should I have him eat more meals that are higher in glycemic and monitor more? He does tend to eat sugary foods uncontrollably at times, and other times he's able to avoid them with much effort. Most of the time he eats low glycemic, but lately does get processed foods and order out several times a week. Yeah, I would do that when you're doing the assessment phase. So I like to really jump in and do the assessment phase before you have them make too many changes, because you really want to see what's going on with them. And I have them eat their worst meals and make sure that you're doing it at the regular intervals, you know, 15, 30, 45, 1, at least at the beginning, to get a sense of where their peak lies. If their peak is all over the place, then I tend to continue the 15, 30, 45, and 1, and then every hour. and make sure you carry it out. If you suspect hypoglycemia, then you have to make sure that you continue it up to the 3 to 4 hour point, because if usually that's when the hypoglycemia happens. Now, there are people who are very heavily producing insulin. They're in the hyperinsulinemia stage before the resistance sets in, and they're gonna have their blood sugars go up, not too bad, come right back down and go too far down. And that's a sign that they're in the very early stages and still need the intervention. So good question. So have them do their worst possible meals. Shonda, I have been working with a few clients. I have a question. I have a client whose blood sugar goes up just before he would be eating again. Interesting. Someone tells us that his blood sugar is going too low, and then it's a cortisol response to raise it. Yes. His blood sugar is only going as low as 4.6. I wouldn't expect that this be low enough to cause a hypoglycemic response. He's not symptomatic with it at all. Just wondering what your thoughts are. He said he's a physician and has a business on the side and works a lot. So he's under a lot of stress. It very well could be that he's having a cortisol response. 4.6 is not that low. Let me plug it into my spreadsheet so I remember what that is. I think that's more like about 80-something or 90. 80-something or 90. Let me pop it in. Let's see. Excel. Oh, I lost it. Let me just pop it into hers. Okay, so you said 4.6. 4.6 is 82. No, that's like perfectly normal. That should not really do that, but if he's in an alarm state, it could be that, I don't know, I'd have to know more. Like what else is going on right before he would be eating? So, and he could be very sensitive. He could be in the hypervigilant state where his body's just going to respond to even ever so slight stresses because he's in maybe stage 1 adrenal fatigue. So those are the things. If it's happening, one of the things to look at, if he keeps going with it, does it get worse? Does he get palpitations? Does he have any kind of negative responses, or is his blood just bringing it up? And when you say, how far is it going up? If it's going up like from 4.6 to 4.8 or 5, it's not a big deal. It could just be a normal glucagon response, that his blood sugar is getting low enough that his glucagon kicks in. And it could be also, the other thing is, if his baselines tend to be higher, and if he tends to get hyperglycemic responses to meals, it's possible that his body has a reset of what it considers getting too low. Because you know that we're constantly in the glucagon-insulin dance, right? So the blood sugar goes up, insulin comes in, normally brings it down. It might go a little bit too low. If you go too long between meals, glucagon comes in, brings it back up. So it could be just a normal variation. If you know what some of those numbers are where it brings it up to, I would be curious to see what that is. And Jean, this is what I'm doing, a testing with a food. I want to see if the blood glucose raises higher than 110. If I test, example, sweet potato, do I have to do it for at least 5 hours? Then my question, when you test, you don't eat. Yeah, okay, that's a great question. So when you're testing single foods, it's a little harder to go the 4 or 5 hours to test it all the way out. That's possible when you have a full meal. And then, because 4 or 5 hours, if you've just eaten a sweet potato, may not last you. If you really want to get a true sense of the reactive hypoglycemia, that's when you go out to the 4 or 5 hours. So you can't necessarily rule out a food as being, yeah, this food's good for me because it keeps your blood sugar steady within that 2-hour period. But if you don't test it all the way out to the 3 or 4, and actually if you just go to 3 or 4, you should be okay. But it's a little harder to do with single foods. And Mary Lynn said she didn't get an email about the call either. Cassandra says, I appreciate the amount of detail you go into. Thank you, Dr. Rita Marie, for the way you explain things. You're welcome, Cassandra. I love explaining things in detail. Shonda says he's working constantly, then it goes up to about 5.3. So let me plug 5.3 in. So that's not really too terrible. I mean, if it was going up to, like, 6, I would be concerned. 5.3. That's only 95. I wouldn't be concerned about it. I would just monitor what happens after meals. It just might be that he's just, because of his high stress, he's high strung, he's on high vigilance, that his body's perceiving that it's low. And it may not even be a cortisol response. It may just be normal glucagon bringing it up and insulin then brings it down. And it may be just the glucagon's a little bit overshooting its mark, which can happen, right? If insulin overshoots its mark, you produce a little bit too much insulin and it causes the blood sugar to go too low. You could produce a little bit too much glucagon and it causes it to go too high. Usually with cortisol responses, it's going to go higher than that. It's going to go more into a real alert response. But these are things to just keep monitoring, you know, really, really interesting. The more we do, the more we learn, right, because we learn about how people are reacting. Okie dokie. Anybody else have a question? You can raise your hand. Star 2 will raise your hand. You can type it in. Otherwise, I am going to go get some lunch before my next call. Tracy, hey.
Hello. I waited till the end because it's sort of blood sugar, but it's I just had a complete physical. Is it okay if I ask you about a few things?
Sure.
Okay. So my hemoglobin A1C is 5.4,
mm-hmm.
and the range was 4.0 to 5.6. So I'm wondering, should I be concerned?
5.4. Did you do the calculator?
No.
Okay, let's do the calculator. 5.4 is probably an average of about 110-ish, so it's a little on the higher than I would like side. But let me just do the, it's a hemoglobin, and I've given you the links to this in the site. It's just easier for me to just do a Google search on it.
Okay.
It's in the assessments piece. Convert hemoglobin A1C to, okay, so enter glycosylated hemoglobin, it's 5.4, and let's just say calculate. It's equivalent of a whole blood of 103, which, so if you were doing it on your, in your doctor's office, they did the whole blood.
Is it the mean glucose estimate? Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah. What did they say?
Because it's 108.
108. Yeah. So 108, you know, it's on the border. Like, if we want you to not go above 110 and your average is 108, it means it is going above 110 at times. On the other hand, there was just some recent information that I read about, and I've got to go back and research this, that was talking about how the hemoglobin A1C may not be as accurate for people who are healthier because their blood cells last longer. And it may not really be an average over 90 days or 120 days. It may be longer. So the jury's out on that one. It may be perfectly fine. And if you're doing your glucose testing and it's pretty much staying below 110 all the time, and your fasting is in the 80s, it's probably nothing to be concerned about.
Okay.
But I would go back and just do some spot checks on some of the highest carbohydrate foods you eat and see what happens.
Okay, do a spot check on that. And the last thing is I wanted to ask you about my lipid, my cholesterol. I mean, I was kind of dumbfounded about these numbers, but like it says my cholesterol was 182.
Okay.
My triglycerides at 96.
HDL?
My 47.
Ooh, that's not good. So that combined with the slightly higher than optimal hemoglobin A1C says that there may be some blood sugar issues that you're not aware of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it could be stress because we don't normally get in the habit of, like, when we're yelling at our kids, stopping to take our blood sugar and see what's happening. And if you're
right.
Doing stuff like that. So it could be some stress response that's causing it to go up. So that indicates your HDLs are low. With the HDLs lower, I like to make sure that your fatty acids are in good balance.
Okay.
You know,
so
your omega-3 and 6 ratios, because
yeah.
That'll throw your HDLs up, and that you're exercising enough.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that. Oh, yeah. The other thing is just my white blood cell count is always low. Always low. It's 2.9. And it was 2.9 last year.
Hmm. That's pretty low, 2.9. And it's been that way for years?
Well, it's been that way for at least 2 years. They sent me to a specialist to see if there was anything, and nothing was conclusive. but, yeah, it's, and I know it can be lower in African-Americans, but,
yeah.
But yeah, it's low. I mean, the range, they say, is 3.8 to 10.8.
Yeah, it's definitely low. I've seen people that are perfectly healthy with low blood counts, but you do need to check it out. And if they've,
mm-hmm.
if they're not concerned, you want to look at the ratios between like the neutrophils and the basophils, the eosinophils, to see if there's some sort of indication of possibly a parasitic thing. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
with a low grade autoimmune problem or a chronic, like a hepatitis type of thing, or EBV, some kind of low-grade chronic viral thing, it causes a lower than usual. So look at the ratios. They're what they call the differential, which is the ratios between those.
It said my neutrophil was 1.07. It was low.
Neutrophil. Okay, did it do the percentages, though? Like percentage of 40% versus 80?
Okay.
That's
all right.
The absolute.
Thank you.
And the absolute would be low because you've got your total as low.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Okay. We're good. I'm going to check one more time on the Q&A. And now we had a bunch of them. Oh, Allison. Hello. Welcome, Allison. Allison said she just received her blood glucose. Allison just joined us. She's an MD in the UK, and she works in kind of a clinic in the UK and is looking to get out of that clinic, the government-run clinic, and do more of this stuff. So I'm excited. Yay! All right. Okay, Allison said, oh, drat, did I get the timing wrong again? I thought you were just getting started. Never mind, I can catch up on the session now. Units are different in the UK. Important to take on board with my courses. Normal glucose here, 4.6, hemoglobin A1C up to 40. Yeah, and we have a spreadsheet, and it's in the NEPT program. One of the resources, we got to get you on a call and just give you a tour of the site. But in the NEPT program, there's a resource thing, blah, 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 under, let me look real quick, and I can tell you where you can find it, and you can get the access to the spreadsheet where you can do the conversion. It's under, does anybody remember? I think it's under Bulletin Board NEPT. Is it, or is it under resources? Yeah, it's under resources across the top, resources, NEPT. You click NEPT, and then there should be on there a Master Health Tracker, Allison, and you can pop all your numbers in and do conversions that way. There's also the converter. You know how to do that on online as well. Jean, since I started this journey, I've eliminated grains, legumes, dairy. I've noticed improvement with some blood glucose readings. But when I did the blood work, the cholesterol is high as 219, and the A1C went 6.2 to 6.3. Whoa, I have a drop in weight a lot. Can it be possibly that the body's adjusting? What can I do to increase my weight? So you're underweight then? I would... start to do the testing and really map yourself out in terms of your testing. And when you map yourself out in terms of the testing, you do the foods, but also do things like your moods, things like how much sleep you've had, possibly blood pressure, and see. Now, if you're losing weight, if you're in a weight loss phase where your body's burning fat, then your cholesterol will come back higher. Definitely will. Your A1C might even come back higher. I'm not sure about that when you're in the throes of weight loss. 6.2 to 6.3, not that much of a difference. It's close. I wouldn't consider it, but I would have expected it to go down. So I would say start to track your glucoses. Get them on the chart and start to see if you see patterns with what you're eating. It could be fruit if you're eating some sweet fruits, because for me I found out that pineapple shot my blood sugar up to 167, and I didn't know it. And my hemoglobin A1C wasn't quite that high when I started out, but it was about 5.6, 5.7, which is higher than I wanted it to be. So I would look at your fruit intake, and I would also look at your stress intake, and also the timing. We haven't gone into that in that much detail yet about timing, but timing can be really important for your meals. But given if you're underweight and you want to increase your weight, you will have to do what I tell people not to do, which is to eat more frequently and eat more calorically dense foods, like more fats, good fats, healthy fats. And Allison said, I'll come on the next time. Yeah, so I think with daylight savings times and all that, it's hard to know the time conversion. But there are some reliable sites online. Just go in and say time conversion, and you'll be able to get it. And one other thing, I'm going to make a note of to see if we can, how hard it would be to add to our things, some of the other time zones of the people in the program, because we have you're in England, and we have somebody in South Africa, we have somebody in Switzerland, and I know you're all on different time zones, so it might be confusing to try to interpret our emails with just U.S. times. All right. Allison said, I didn't realize that. I know lipids go up with hypothyroidism, but not with weight loss. Yeah, if you're in the throes of it, I mean, it's not going to go up with just slow, moderate weight loss, but if somebody's on like a fast or somebody's on a pretty intense weight loss regime, you will see a temporary rise in the lipid numbers. So, all right. All right, everyone. Thank you so much, all of you, for being here. Eleanor raised her hand one more time. You got to get in. Okay, last one.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I got excited when you brought that topic up with Tracy, because I went with a client to a doctor who refused to do an A1C, and I was doing all this research to try to understand what his argument was going to be, and I came across that article that said that, and I don't know which direction it is, but healthy people, it either dies, the blood cells die quicker, or the other way around, and that this is one of the reasons why the A1C isn't that reliable. So if you could look at that and tell me what you think of that.
Yeah, I'm going to look at that. And the other thing is I'm more and more leaning towards fructosamine as opposed to hemoglobin A1C, because it's basically, it's glycosylation of amino acids. And it basically gives you more of what's going on in 3 to 4 weeks as opposed to 12. So it's even more clinically relevant if you're trying to see what's happening in someone. So the jury's out on that, and I'll definitely get back to you guys on what I find out. I've got some articles pinned up.
That's even, it's hard enough to get them to do an A1C, because you're trying to get people to be covered under insurance, right?
Yeah.
And so that you have to kind of go to battle with, you know, doctors trying to convince them to do these things, and some of them don't even think they're necessary. So I don't think the other one, I don't even know if they even know.
They probably never even heard of fructosamine.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that not Amazon, but Direct Labs. So for people in out of the country, not easy. But for Direct Labs, I'm pretty sure Direct Labs does fructosamine.
But how do you get insurance to cover these things for people if you're telling them to do this off? You know, when they go to the doctor, it gets covered under their
insurance. You know, you got to tell them you're worth it and spend the $25. Like, how often do you go to the movies and buy popcorn and spend $25 in an evening?
Okay.
Spend the $25 and test your health.
Okay.
I mean, people spend a lot of money on entertainment. How many women go and get their nails done for $100 a pop or get a perm done? I mean, come on, this is your health, and we shouldn't expect that the government should pay for all this or the insurance companies should pay for it. They don't pay for us to get new clothes. They don't pay for us to cut our hair. That's a maintenance thing.
I know. It's just when you're doing this detective work, you're all, can we do, let's do this test, let's do that, you know, and then they kind of, it's just easier.
Yeah. I would look it up on Direct Labs and see how expensive they are. Really get in touch when people start to to say things like, I can't afford this. Do some comparisons. Yeah, it's $25. How often do you spend $25 on stuff that's not going to bring you, you know, answers to your health challenges? You know, lighten up a little.
That's going to hurt your health, yeah.
That's going to hurt, right? I mean, it's one thing when I really have to work hard, and I try not to do very often those $400 complete hormone panels because that's a lot of money. But there's times when it absolutely needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who are willing to spend it. They're like, I'm penny pinching over here, but not on my health. I'm going to do it. And I think really part of it goes back to some of the stuff that when we had Bill Barron on that call a few weeks ago, and he was talking about when you're talking to people about working with you, remember that you're not, your job is not to convince them that you're the best thing going and that they should be working with you. Your job is to get them to buy the concept of their health is worth everything. And their health is the most important thing. And then if they decide to work with you, great. And if they don't, they work with somebody else, great. You've convinced them that their health is worth it. That's your job. And it makes it so much easier to sell yourself when you're on an enrollment call. You're not selling you. You're selling the concept of ideal radiant health. And then it does take some money to invest in it, and it's worth it. Make sense?
Yes, 100%.
Okay, good for you. All right, I'm going to go. I'm going to go grab lunch before I have to get on another call in 3 minutes.
Hey, sorry.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
I'll open everybody's hands. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.